By any margin, it was a stunning defeat for the government. The family and care referendums were roundly rejected by voters this weekend. The family referendum was defeated by a margin of more than 2-1, with 67% of voters saying no. In the care referendum, it was even higher, almost 3-1, with 74% voting against it. In today's programme, we'll examine what that means for the government, opposition and for the constitution, which today still retains wording which defines the family as one based on marriage and still has text which talks about women's duties in the home. Our reporter Gavin O'Callaghan spoke to voters in Killester in Dublin this morning to find out why they voted the way they did.
I thought it was an awful waste of money, the whole thing. I thought it was pointless. It wasn't going to change anything. I thought it was just the government trying to look modern and they're just not fooling anybody anymore with this stuff.
Lack of trust, and when you look into it, it wasn't adding up. Like,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? They're telling you they're changing one thing, but when you look deeper into it, that's not what they're actually changing. Like, and then you might the Attorney General's report and all just confirmed it. Like, you know,
nobody at my door, no leaflets came in. I was looking on the net trying to get my information all the time and try and keep on top of things. That's the way I found it.
It's not surprising,
yeah.
No. Wasn't explained clearly enough.
Well, I voted no, and it's not that they weren't worthy causes. I just think, a bit like the Lisbon vote, it was rushed.
Irresponsible, utter nonsense. They must go. Enough is enough, you know.
Some voters in Killester in Dublin this morning speaking to our reporter Gavin O'Callaghan. We're joined now from our Waterford studio by Mary Butler, Minister of State for Mental Health and Older People, who campaigned for a yes vote in these referendums. Minister, good afternoon and thank you for being with us.
Good afternoon, Justin.
What went wrong for you and for the government this weekend?
It's obvious our explanations didn't meet the threshold of certainty for many people, and we have to take ownership of this. The people spoke clearly, they have had their say, and they clearly and concisely did not agree with the wording, the changed wording we proposed to change Articles 41 and 41.2. I do believe, though, as a government, we went into this campaign in all sincerity. I campaigned myself. I spoke on the airwaves. And I have spoken to many people yesterday, and I believe one of the speakers there in the Vox Pop summed it up. It wasn't explained clearly enough, and we have to take ownership of that.
Do you think voters were confused then?
I don't think voters were confused, because voters, you know, especially in the last week, they educated themselves and they looked at the reasoning behind what we were proposing. I felt initially voters wanted to support the family referendum changes, but they felt that marriage was being devalued. Even though that was not the case, if it had been a success, the status of marriage would have remained the same. But we didn't obviously explain it well enough, and we didn't allay people's concerns. The government's intention was to reflect, I suppose, a more modern society. The fact that 400,000 families are not based on marriage, are excluded from the current concept of family in the constitution, it's still the same today. That disappoints me as a person, and that disappoints me as a woman who 100% believes in marriage and is married since 1988. But for those, and I was contacted by quite a few people yesterday by email and in person, people who were single mothers, and they were disappointed. But the blame has to lie squarely with us as a government,
okay,
that we didn't do our job well enough.
And on that, your colleague Joe O'Brien from the Green Party said that it would have been good to see more people knocking on doors. Could the Taoiseach, who leads the government, have done more to explain this? Could he have come out sooner in the referendum campaign to clarify things that were emerging? We didn't see much of him until the final days of the campaign.
Look, I think in fairness, when you're the Taoiseach of the country, or when you're the Taoiseach of the country, and the country still has to be run, you know, everybody did as much as they could possibly do under their own diary commitments. But obviously we didn't do enough. And like, I would have to be straight and say not everybody got behind this across government. I'll be very clear about that. Well, so some people didn't, you know, and that was their own reasoning. And when you take into account the fact that we had three coalition parties, we had soft support, you can say, from Sinn Féin, Soc Dems, and the Labour Party, and we also had the largest NGOs in the country that supported the changes to the referendum clauses. But I do believe, if I have to be truly honest, that we could have done more, and we didn't.
Who could have done more then, Minister? I mean, is it your colleagues in Fine Gael you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about colleagues across all the three parties. I feel we could have done more. It was, you know, I suppose, you know, hindsight is a great thing, and everybody is very, very busy, and we're all running constituency offices, and whether you're a Minister of State or you're a member of the Cabinet, look, we have to take ownership of this and we have to reflect. And if you reflect on those that were public in relation to this on the media, appearing on television and otherwise, you will see that it was possibly the same six or seven people were out the whole time trying to do their best to sell it. And, you know, we have to reflect and we have to look back on what, you know, how we didn't explain this. We obviously didn't meet the threshold of certainty for voters, and the voters gave us a kicking yesterday.
They did. Do you accept then that holding the referendum on International Women's Day was a bit of a stunt that backfired, that women saw through an attempt to kind of cajole them into voting for a constitutional change under the guise that it was essentially a women's rights issue, when it really lacked clarity and teeth that the carers of Ireland were looking for?
I think if you were to look back at polls in the last 6 to 8 weeks, you know, when the referendum was announced first, people were more or less supportive. But it changed in the last 2 weeks. And why it changed in the last 2 weeks, that people weren't happy with certain wording such as durable relationships and strive. And in fairness to the No campaign, they exploited things in relation to unintended consequences that might arise and that would have to be dealt with in the courts. Social media played a huge part in this as well. And I was tired of reading posts about this was going to have a huge impact on immigration, and we would see families with 5 and 10 wives and husbands coming into the country, all misinformation. But at the same time, regardless of what was misinformation, what was on social media, we still have to take responsibility for this. And the purpose of both amendments changed. So the second amendment in relation to care turned into, I suppose, an amendment specifically on supports for people with disabilities and removing a woman from the home, whereas that was never the purpose of it. I still believe a woman's place is wherever she wants to be, whether that's in the home or otherwise. And then in relation to the referendum on families, it seemed to be devaluing marriage, which was never the intention. All we ever wanted to do was include the families that are not married. And, you know, we will have to reflect very, very clearly on this, how it went so wrong, because I still believe that many people in Ireland do want to support the extension of families, and many people in Ireland do believe that a woman doesn't have to be placed in the home only.
On Thursday, Minister, the day of the broadcast moratorium, the Ditch website published legal advice from the Attorney General, in which he said it was difficult to predict with certainty how the courts would interpret the term durable relationships, and also suggested that the care referendum could lead to litigation in the areas of childcare, social protection, education and immigration. Does it concern you that that advice was leaked in the way it was on the last day of the campaign, where information about it couldn't be broadcast?
It's a huge concern, of course, that that was leaked at the same day, and the moratorium was applied to the likes of yourself from 12 o'clock on Thursday, but there's no moratorium across social media, and that's something that we're certainly going to have to look at going forward, because when you have a moratorium across, you know, trusted, newsworthy radio, television, whatever it is, and then you have social media. But, like, it was absolutely scandalous that that was leaked.
Is that going to be investigated?
I assume it will be. I think Minister Rodrigo Gorman said yesterday in Dublin Castle that that would be investigated. But I don't know, will you ever get to the source of that? But we are, you know, we're facing now local elections, European elections, general elections. And I think we certainly have to look at, if there's a moratorium across public broadcasting, there also, we have to look at a moratorium mainstream across social media, whereas we can't depend on some of what we're reading across social media.
All right, before I let you go, Minister, can I ask you about an attack on your own private car which took place in Waterford City as you were attending an event for International Women's Day? I believe the rear tyre badly damaged. It's not the first time that you have been the subject of abusive behaviour, if I'll put it that way. Are you concerned now about your own safety? Are you taking steps to increase your own security in light of that attack?
Unfortunately, I have had to do that over the last 18 months. Being a politician in current times brings challenges. The biggest challenge I face doing a job that I love is dealing with personal safety concerns. I've dealt with, in the last 18 months, a credible death threat, abusive texts where a person was prosecuted in court. I've been targeted by the far right at events, at my constituency offices. I worry about the safety of my staff. I've said that previously. But on Friday, while I was speaking at an International Women's Day event on anti-racism and empowering women of all nationalities, my car was targeted. And thankfully, a good Samaritan posted on social media, and after a few hours, even after driving the car, I was alerted to say that there was trouble with my car had been targeted, and my car now went to the garage and it has been resolved. But it is a genuine worry that I and many other politicians, especially female politicians, deal with every day of the week while we're doing our work.
Minister of State Mary Butler, thank you for talking to us today from our Waterford studio. Let's talk now to Sinn Féin TD Dunica O'Leary, whose party campaigned for a yes vote in each of the two referendums. Dunica O'Leary, welcome to the programme. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Justin. How are you?
According to the Ireland Thinks exit poll in the Sunday Independent today, in the family referendum, 78% of Sinn Féin voters voted no. In the care referendum, 88% of Sinn Féin voters voted no. You got this badly wrong, didn't you?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I suppose, you know, we have a Republican, I'm a Republican, and we have a Republican system of government, and at the end of the day, the people are sovereign. So, look, when they speak, you have to listen, and that's, I suppose, they've spoken very loud and clear, and they clearly weren't satisfied with the proposition that was on the table. It's been defeated, and look, I mean, I think, you know, you have to reflect on that, but I think the people have spoken very loud and clear, and I suppose that's final in that regard.
Your own party, though, advocated for a yes vote. How did Sinn Féin get to be so out of touch with its own support base in this case?
To be honest, I don't think there's any real evidence of that. Like, I mean, I suppose, like, you know, obviously, like, everyone I'm canvassing now at the minute and the build-up to the local elections, very few people would have raised it before Tuesday. And I think a lot of people, you kind of got a sense. I think the scale of the defeat, I think, would have taken everyone by surprise. But I don't think really from the middle of this week that it was particularly surprising that the care referendum was going to be defeated. But, like, I mean, you know, I think people are, we have a very sophisticated electorate, and I think they are well able to examine these issues and come to their own conclusions. I met a lot of people who were voting for Sinn Féin at the local elections who were voting for no, and they were perfectly happy and comfortable with that position. They believe that we are the best people to represent them. They didn't like this constitutional proposition, and that was fair enough. Like,
could you and your party have done more during this campaign? I mean, you were lukewarm enough about it. Did you go out and campaign yourself for a yes vote?
Yeah. Look, we were lukewarm, and I think with good reason. Like, I mean, because look, I mean, people have talked about, you know, that it was a waste of money. Like, I don't think you can put a price on democracy, but I tell you what is a waste of money is putting a proposition to a citizens' assembly, getting them to examine that, and then not going with that wording to the people. Like, I mean, I think that was absolutely ludicrous. And I think it was a solo run from the government in that respect, in that, you know, an awful lot of people were looking for a more substantial change. And I think you heard that message loud and clear from carers and people with disabilities, that they were looking for a more substantial right. change that would be meaning for them and wouldn't exclude them. So I think people felt very frustrated at that. So, yeah, we were lukewarm. We weren't convinced. I think on balance, we felt that the wording that was being proposed was a bit better than what's in the Constitution. But I think the lesson from this referendum for everyone really is that when it comes to the Constitution, people don't want to accept second best. They want to be sure that it's the absolute best thing. I think, you know, an awful lot more needs to be done. I think that's very obvious in terms of supporting carers right. and people with disabilities. And I think, look, there's no point crying about it either. Like, you know, we will be back up at it on Monday and out canvassing, out campaigning and focusing on
right.
the bread and butter issues that people are focused on in terms of health, in terms of housing and putting our opposition to the government and making sure they're held to account.
All right. Sinn Féin TD Donacha O'Leary, thank you for talking to us today from Cork. We're joined on, in the studio now by Padraig Tobin, the AIN2 leader, one of only two parties in the Dáil to advocate and campaign strongly for a no vote in each of these two referendums. Padraig Tobin, welcome to the programme. Do you accept that the Constitution today is not the better for still having language in it that talks about a woman's life within the home and mother's duties in the home?
Well, first of all, I would say it was a great result in the referendum. It's a victory for democracy and it was a victory for the people, I think, against the political establishment in this country at the moment. You know, I listened to Mary Butler, you know, explain, you know, state that the reason why it may have been lost is because the government didn't explain it properly. That is not the case. The reason it lost is because people did not agree with the amendments that were put to them. And I think it's a little bit patronising if people say, well, we didn't explain it properly or the people didn't understand it properly. And I think if a government party has still that instinct, even at that stage, they're still not listening to the people. And that's okay. at the heart of the problem here politically.
But on the language that still remains in the Constitution, that a woman's life is within the home and mother's duties, speaks about mother's duties in the home. Do you think that language should still be there?
Yeah, we've always said that the language should be updated. We would have liked to have seen mother's and father's duties in the home, because you know what? We do have duties within the home. And, you know, we didn't want to see mother's erased from the Constitution because, you know, mothers provide a unique contribution to society. And I think we are living in a kind of a neoliberal society at the moment that just recognises people's value by their economic activity. An actual fact that, you know, the most important things that we have in our lives is actually the relationships that we have with people and, you know, the love that we share with people. And the idea that the Constitution should recognise mother and father's role within the home, I think, is a good thing and is a thing that we should actually, it shows gratitude for their efforts. Within the home.
Should the Constitution also recognise families which are not based in marriage?
Yeah, absolutely. We would have liked to have seen an update in the language there as well. But the problem is that the government put an amendment in front of the people that nobody could understand. The ministers couldn't get their heads around themselves. And actually, interestingly, and you mentioned this earlier, the Attorney General actually gave advice to the governments to state that there was no confidence to in relation to how the courts themselves would understand that term. And that's the key, the problem. And, you know, I think one of the big issues for me for this is that we had government ministers and Roger O'Gorman who got advice from the Attorney General in relation that was chiming exactly with the language that we in AIN2 were using. But those ministers were refuting what we were saying and actually refuting the advice publicly that the Attorney General had given. And in many ways, they misled the people in front of that constitutional referendum. And that's a very, very serious thing because a referendum to the Constitution is extremely important. And for a minister to mislead the people in advance of that, I think is a resigning issue.
Well, I think the minister last night when he spoke about that disputed any assertion that he misled anybody.
I have a quote here from him. He actually says here in a report, he says he's wrong because it's very clear legal advice that we received to the Attorney General is that these items will not be impacted upon
The minister isn't here to respond sure. to that. Can I just ask you, you've had a huge profile during this campaign. You were involved in many of the debates and you came out on the same side as the majority of the people. There is another big campaign coming up soon, the European elections, and there have been some rumours that you might stand in those elections yourself. Is that something that you're considering?
Yeah, I will be standing for the European elections for Midlands Northwest in the European elections. And the reason that we'll be doing it is because we are a campaigning party. We didn't come to the decision around the referendum in order to get space in the media. We came at it because we critically analysed the government's proposition and we saw the major flaws within it. We saw that the fact that it would put a ceiling over families who were looking for help in terms of care. And actually, we came to that decision knowing, thinking at least at that stage, that the prevailing winds would be against us. But it's not our instinct to put the finger in the air to find out which way the wind blows. The Dáil is already stocked full of TDs who put their finger in the air to find out which way the wind blows. And AIM2 is different. We were founded on the basis that we will work out what's the right thing to do in these situations. And we'll use the European election platform again to crowbar the bread and butter issues back onto the thing. And that's a key issue.
All right.
Because the bread and butter issues are being forgotten about
all right,
by the government.
We won't start that campaign now. But for now, Padraig Tobin, of the leader of AIM2, thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us today. Now, where stands the Constitution today after the two defeated referendums? Well, we're joined from Galway now by Professor Donica O'Connell, established professor of law at University of Galway. Professor O'Connell, good afternoon and thank you for being with us.
Good afternoon, Justin.
Is the Constitution better off today for not having the two amendments proposed by the government this week in it?
Well, I actually wanted the Constitution to be changed, but I voted against both amendments. And that probably typifies the approach taken by many people. And rather than say whether the Constitution is better today than it was tomorrow, I think we should maybe ask whether the process of constitutional change is better. And if I could just make four really brief points, and I will confine myself on these. The first one is, I think the government, to be fair, can't provide absolute certainty when it puts forward constitutional amendments. But if both propositions are vague, are unclear, they're taking a huge risk. The second point is that a massive establishment consensus is no guarantee of success, and I would actually suggest probably militates against success. The third point is that the deliberative process prior to the referendum is hugely important, and taking shortcuts with that, like skipping pre-legislative scrutiny or changing the recommendations of the Citizens' Assembly, are a really bad idea. And they clearly present challenges to civil society groups that are engaged in those processes. And a lot of NGOs today are getting criticism for going along with the government. But two NGOs actually stand out for their independence in relation to this. That's FLAC and ICCL, who actually stood their ground and opposed the changes in relation to care particularly. And the fourth and final point that I'd like to make is a point about symbolism and lived experience. That when you're putting forward symbolic changes to the Constitution and you're grounding the case for those in lived experience, well, then how you present that lived experience has to be authentic. And Mary Butler, in her interview, made some comments about social media and kind of represented that as if it was all negative. In fact, if you looked at the social media campaign for this, it was a really positive representation of the lived experience of carers and people with disabilities. It was a really positive representation of the dissenting position of very solid feminists who disagreed with other feminists who were active in this campaign. And in fact, the social media dimension of this wasn't entirely negative. In fact, was hugely positive in some very important respects.
What should happen now then? Should there be a revisiting of these two referendums by a future government, perhaps with, as you say, the pre-legislative scrutiny and maybe a bit more time put into getting the wording right?
No, I don't think that these propositions should be represented. I think that would actually be undemocratic and quite offensive to many people. I think what the next government, and clearly it's not a matter for this government, what the next government needs to really think about is the idea of moving away from the notion of visibility or recognition or symbolism in the Constitution. And they need to engage seriously with ideas about socioeconomic rights, drawing on the international instruments that actually bind Ireland. And there's really fertile ground here for collaboration between the parties of the left. Parties on the left got themselves into a very embarrassing position in the way in which they supported the government after they changed the Citizens' Assembly recommendations. And the public are far more in tune with the idea, are in tune with the idea of socioeconomic rights that are actually enforceable. And I think we really need to get our heads around that as for the next wave of constitutional reform, which would actually be meaningful.
And just finally, Donica, and briefly, if you could, the Attorney General's advice published on the Ditch website on Thursday, it spelled out the legal view provided to the government of the consequences of these referendums. What's your own assessment of what the Attorney General said and whether the government should itself have published that advice earlier in the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I read that advice like many other people. I think it would have caused much bigger problems for the government in relation to durable relationships than it did in relation to striving to support care in the family. However, one of the things that I really noticed from reading it is the heightened alertness in the Office of the Attorney General to anything that approximates to a justiciable socioeconomic right. It's like as if they could see them from the moon. And I think that's a real problem. Why doesn't the Attorney General's opinion, for example, inform a minister how he or she might actually, in an imaginative and positive way, give effect to socioeconomic rights and not just be entirely premised on the need to avoid litigation when socioeconomic rights are not actually realised? In relation to the moratorium, I think it makes complete sense to get rid of the broadcast moratorium as recommended by Gavin Riley this morning. I completely disagree with Mary Butler that this is something that could now be imposed on social media. The Electoral Commission now exists and can guard against manipulation and abuse. And I think broadly in relation to the Office of the Attorney General and how it operates, we're in the dark ages when it comes to that office. It's where the Department of Finance and the Office of the Attorney General is where really good ideas go to die, and we need to have much more transparency about what goes on in both offices.
All right, Professor Dunica O'Connell from University of Galway, thank you very much indeed for talking to us today. Let's get some political analysis now and talk to Hugh O'Connell, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish and Sunday Independent. Hugh, good afternoon. Thanks for talking to us today.
Good afternoon, Justin.
How damaging is this a result for the government?
I think it remains to be seen. I mean, on the face of it, is an extremely damaging result. It's one of the biggest referendum defeats in the case of one of the referendums. It's one of the biggest, and I think in the other, it's the third biggest. So, this is a significant setback for the coalition. It's the first electoral test, I guess, a national electoral test in 4 years. But I don't necessarily think there'd be a correlation between what happened yesterday and what might happen in the local and European elections, or indeed in the general election. I think it works both ways. Sometimes you can have a situation where a government can pass a referendum, such as marriage equality, for example, in 2015, and 9 months later that Fine Gael Labour coalition was rejected by the electorate. So I think that remains to be seen, but there's no doubt there's a lot of soul-searching going on this morning and a lot of blame going around,
yes,
I think, as you heard Mary Butler earlier.
It did, and I was going to bring that up. I mean, could it be damaging to government cohesion? Because you heard Mary Butler there saying not everybody stepped up to the plate. You had similar comments, I think, from Joe O'Brien of the Green Party. So is it going to be damaging for that unity within government?
I mean, it's been a pretty cohesive coalition for the last 4 years, but I mean, I think it was inevitable in the run-up to a general election, and particularly with the local and European elections coming, with each of the three parties trying to distinguish themselves from the other, that there would be a bit of separation, a bit of conscious uncoupling, I guess you might call it. And I think that's going to be reflected in, it's already been reflected in the blame game. A lot of fingers obviously been pointed at the Taoiseach in respect of the timing of the referendum, particularly from the Green Party privately. I picked up a lot of that over the end of last week and yesterday. But also, you know, as you say, Mary Butler there pointing the finger at all three parties. And I mean, I think all parties were aside maybe from the Green Party, were deficient in terms of their campaigning. I mean, you know, there was no sign, for example, of Heather Humphreys, Fine Gael's campaign director yesterday in Dublin Castle, which I found surprising. And equally, there were plenty of people in Fianna Fáil, I don't think, who campaigned very vigorously on this. You know, and then there's the opposition parties as well should take the share of the blame. I mean, you know, I heard your interview with Dunica O'Leary there earlier, and he talked about Sinn Féin being lukewarm on this. I think because Sinn Féin's political antenna probably felt that, you know, this wasn't going to pass, therefore, you know, support it, but don't support it too strongly. So, look, in terms of coalition cohesion, I think that's going to be hit a little bit, but I mean, I still think this government has a good chance of running the full term and won't come apart because of this.
Your own paper today has a very interesting exit poll carried out by Ireland Thinks, which analyses why people voted the way they did. And one of the things emerging is distrust of the government. Is that something that because of the strength of that no vote and the fact that distrust of the government is built into that, is that something that will concern the coalition?
I think it will, yeah. I mean, what struck me as well was the higher than expected turnout. I think a lot of people were expecting a turnout of in and around 30%, 44% turnout, I think it was. And the fact as well, I think, that there was a very strong no vote and a strong turnout in a lot of working class areas, I think, where the government was a bit surprised by that. People I spoke to in government were surprised at the level of the no vote in those areas. And I think that is reflective of people, and you heard it in your Vox Pop earlier, there was a distrust in government and what they were putting to the people here. Now, whether that is reflected in kind of wider distrust of government on a whole swathe of issues from immigration to housing to health, again, remains to be seen. But there's no doubt about it, I think, that there's a large cohort of voters out there who do not trust this government, and that was reflected ultimately at the ballot box yesterday.
Hugh, thank you very much indeed for that. That's Hugh O'Connell, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish and Sunday Independent.